Coming up on the podcast today, we've got beef between Damian Lillard and the Clippers. We got beef between TJ Warren and Jimmy Butler. The Phoenix Suns are the hottest team in the bubble, and they're still trying to get Devin Booker out of there. Plus, what does the Most Improved Player Award mean to you? All that and more on The Athletic NBA Show, which starts now.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Stay woke. Bruh. New York strip steak? Ooh!
This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show Basket Buds Edition. That's right. It's Monday. We're starting off your week right here on the Athletic, on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. We got Jay King. We got Trevon Edwards. We got Dave DeFore. We've got Wozni Lambre. We've got Mike Smeltz producing it. And we have controversy, gentlemen, in the form of one Damian Lillard, who doesn't like to talk until he talks. And when he talks, he really lays it out for him. So they lose to the Clippers. What was that, Saturday? Saturday morning, right? Saturday midday. They lose to the Clippers. Portland Trailblazers need all these games. They lose to the Clippers. And not only do they lose, Damian Lillard misses two clutch free throws to help that loss happen. Clippers win. Patrick Beverley talking trash. Paul George talking trash. They're laughing. They're waving goodbye. They're doing all that stuff. So Damian Lillard gets asked afterwards about it, and he says it's just a sign of respect, really, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he sent Patrick Beverley home in spectacular fashion. He sent Paul George home in spectacular fashion. And so it's just a sign of respect of what they know he can do. Then we got some Instagram comments. Trey, make sense of why Paul George, for me, make sense of why Paul George is so defensive here. Because Paul George, with the Instagram comments, with the Instagram stories saying, well, come on, you guys are talking now, and you don't know what it's like to go through six injuries and to come back and lay it all on the ground and all this stuff. He comes off looking the worst out of all this, in my opinion.
Well, actually, he's not defensive because he's he's been sent home a couple of times. But to be honest, like, you know, once you get ganged up on, everybody always has excuses, and obviously if you played a huge role in it or not, and, you know, obviously the families have gotten involved too, which has turned into a big mess. It's just something to say, you know. The comments is even more entertaining. I was surprised that Dame even responded, but of course he felt some way. And, you know, it just kind of was great until, you know, the family members, you know, Paul George's, I don't want to say his wife, but the mother of his child, and then Damian Lillard's sister involved, just took the whole fun out of it, you know, because it was kind of looking like, you know, the bubble was actually becoming the bubble, because, you know, you're going to have to see these guys and wondering how guys would react, or, you know, and all it did for Paul, I mean, all it did for Dame is inspire him to get 50 points today.
Dame's the only one who could say his message and have it mean as much as he did, because when he went in the Instagram comments and told Paul George, like, you had to leave, or whatever he told him, like, you had to leave, you had to go get guys, Dame is solidified. Like, Dame has stayed in Portland. He has dragged a team that didn't have too much talent to the Western Conference Finals. He has gotten better and better every year. He's as loyal as they get. He has never left. I doubt he ever will leave Portland unless they trade him somewhere. So when he says that message, it burns. Plus, on top of that, he beat Paul George. He beat Paul George when Paul George had Russell Westbrook next to him. He beat Patrick Beverley. Beverley's not on his level. So I thought Dame came out of this, even though he missed the two free throws, he came out of this just lovely. I enjoyed his entire speech, and I think it means a lot because of who he is and what he's done in Portland. And obviously, you know, he hit that, what did Paul George call it, like a bad shot, the 37-footer, yeah. Series ending.
Looked pretty good to me.
Yeah, and that's what Dame does. So I think Paul George, he tends to have some reactions where he looks bad sometimes, and I think this time he looked bad. Like, Dame Lillard somehow came out on top, even though he missed the two clutch free throws.
When I listened to the Dame comments, I thought of two things. One, this is the NBA as WWE, but in, like, the best way possible, right? Like, it's theater. Like, and I think part of it is the guys know they know what they're doing, you know, playing up the idea of some sort of hatred or dislike for each other, because we love it, the fans love it. It's great. It adds a layer of tension to the game, besides what's already happening on the court. And two, just being around the Clippers all year, like, this is kind of how they are. They're a bit of a, some people would say cocky, arrogant, confident. Well, however you want to, you know, depending on where you stand is probably what word you would use. But this is right in line with the sort of attitude of that group. Like, they're kind of assholes, man. Like, they just are. And so that's why I'm just like, well, this is still, like, even though it's Paul George and it's like, you know, I'm the go fishing guy and, you know, I'm the been dreaming of being a Clipper my whole life, telling lies guy. But, like, right? But you know, this is part and parcel for what the team is like. So I wasn't really surprised at all. Now, the family members getting involved, again, that's, you know, more theater. I just think it's even funnier for me.
Anybody mentioned that the one guy who's actually done something on that team is the quietest one? Right, like Kawhi is like
the
only real
one or
killer.
The quietest one, Trey, don't block
exactly.
Me.
Jesus Christ. I mean, he's the only real, like, he's the real killer on that team. Like, you know, when I think about Kawhi Leonard, like, if I think about Damian Lillard, Patrick Beverley, and Paul George, the only guy even approaching Kawhi is Damian Lillard. I'm not picking those other two guys over Dame any day of the week, and it's because Dame can send guys home. And I mean, we all talk about it, and I know we joke about it all the time, but Paul George is great at showing up in games that don't count. Let's see if he's got this same energy in a month.
Of course he will, because he'll have Kawhi leading the way. That's easy. Right?
Exactly.
Like, this is my issue with Paul George talking shit, right? I actually don't have a problem with him talking shit. It's that when you then get one-upped, because he did. He got one up by Damian Lillard, which that happens. If you're going to talk shit, then there's a chance that you're going to lose that shit-talking battle, which is fine. It happens. It doesn't actually matter. And then you start whining. Then you start whining like the woe is me. Oh, but, you know, I've been through injuries and I've had six surgeries. It's like, we know. We don't need your Wikipedia. Yeah. We know. We've watched the whole fucking thing, Paul. And part of that was Dame waving your ass goodbye. And it's okay. You lost, right? You've won series and you've lost series. That's what happens in the NBA. And until you become
really
a champion,
to normalize losing,
right? Until you become a champion, because Kawhi, you know, drags your ass to the finals. Like, that's gonna be your story, and that's fine. But don't talk shit and then be mad that someone was better at talking shit than you.
Well, Dame has broken up two franchises that he's played against with buzzer beating threes. Paul George has done it twice. By asking for trades.
Yeah, then the Thunder got better.
Case closed. Case closed.
That was the
here.
Line of the podcast
that,
right
that,
there.
That was mean.
I didn't expect us to bury somebody today, man. I really thought this
what do you think I brought all these shovels for, Trey? This is what we're here for.
But here's the thing, too. Like, when Dame gets involved, you know he's going to win the back and forth. I feel like he rarely gets involved, but when he does, it's just like there's a violence behind what he does and like a purpose behind what he does that's pretty rare. Like he goes at guys' necks when he does go. And you also knew he was going to have 50-something points today after he missed two big free throws. Like Dame is steady. Dame's a force. And like that Portland Trailblazers team has had so much bad luck this year. Their roster is not great. Dame never complains. He just keeps scoring bundles and bundles of points and trying to drag that sorry ass team to the playoffs.
Now,
yeah.
Didn't Damian Lillard also write a letter because he didn't make the All-Star team?
Oh, Dame complains all the time. Right? That's the thing is Dame's like, "Oh, I got snubbed." It's like, "Actually, there's like 18 West All-Stars in their 12 spots. So you didn't get snubbed." Like,
but to be fair, I think the trade-off is him getting written off every year that the Blazers are not going to be shit and not make the playoffs and they make it. Every year. They either get 8th, 9th, 10th. You know, they actually got a chance to make it to the Western Conference Finals, which was even more wild. But, yeah, nobody had that expected. So, I think, like, despite him whining for the All-Star pinches, and he's about to pass Chris Webber, sadly. Overall, dude is a gamer, man. And I thought I thought his response was exceptional and how it's supposed to be. And someone on Twitter, I think it was Pierce, who said that these NBA guys have to realize that, you know, Dame doesn't have friends. They're just employees. And that's, I think, everybody needs to have that approach. Make it, normalize that. And get back to the perfect bump in the bubble.
Well, that's the thing, Trace. I think it's whiny and kind of corny when Dame complains that he didn't make the All-Star team. But then the next 2 months, he goes and lights up the rest of the league, right? Like, exactly. He backs up that trash talk or that complaint or whatever. Like, he backs it up by going out and lighting the league on fire. Like, Paul George is gonna back this up by saying, "Hey, Kawhi, can you do this for me?"
Man, I hope
we are lighting up Paul George.
You know what, Jay? It must be an end of game situation then, if we're lighting up Paul George.
Good God! We need a bomb sound in there.
Like, he's awesome. We're doing this. Paul George is awesome, right? He was third in MVP voting last year. He's incredible. But quit complaining. Quit whining. Like, if you want to talk shit and you want the smoke, when the smoke comes back at you, you can't then say, "Well, actually, I've been through 6 surgeries."
Well, and what's funny is, you know, the other night when Devin Booker.
I know. Look, it felt bad when I used the voice. I don't love that I did that. But
you
used
the white voice while being white. You can't do that.
It's an exponential whiteness that I don't advocate, but I used. Okay, that was privilege right there.
Cultural appropriation.
Oh my god. Somehow I appropriated my own culture. I don't know how I did it, but I did it.
So we talked about this the other night, Zach, on the Ding. You know, Devin Booker hits that very difficult fadeaway shot over Paul George, right? Now, it's not Paul George's, you know, fault that the shot was made, right? You're going to get your eye dotted if you put yourself in that position. I respect that Paul George is always willing to defend.
Absolutely.
Especially at end of games. I love that, right? But don't, like the calling Dame's big shot a bad shot, that's like loser mentality, man.
I agree. Like Alonzo Mourning got dunked on all the time, right? Yeah, but he also blocked the shit out of a lot of dunk attempts. Mm-hmm. Like, you put yourself
and
in that.
Paul George is a great defender.
Yeah, absolutely.
Paul George is talking crap about game 68 of the regular season to the man who ended his season last year with a series ending 37-footer in his mug and forced him to ask for a trade.
Wait, the franchise got broken up? I thought Westbrook stayed.
Oh, no. Oh, Washington. Here he quote-unquote, got stayed. Traded. You know,
well, they made ask for a trade. Better.
Vocally.
Russ stayed.
Yeah.
Russ stayed.
I feel like we've gone overboard on Paul George.
I think Damian Lillard should be executive of the year.
Well, this is also what I like, right? Is Dame in that game on Saturday, he talks shit. Like, he points to Patrick Beverley, "I want you out here. I want you out here," right? And then he chokes. He misses 2 huge free throws. Who knows? That game may cost them the playoffs. It might absolutely cost them playoffs. That could have put them in the 8 seed for all we know, and they just need to win 1 game in the play-in tournament. We don't know how that's going to finish out yet. But he talked shit, he choked, and he owned it. That's what happens. That's how that works. Like, I don't. This is the issue I have with Paul George.
Do you guys remember when CJ Miles took a wide-open shot at the end of a game, and Paul George got absolutely heated at him? And came out and said, like, the superstar has to take that shot. That was my least favorite press conference any player has ever had. Just threw his teammate under the bus, said basically, like, nobody else deserves the ball in the final moments except for me. After it was a really open shot, a good look.
And a better shooter than he was at the time, by the way. CJ Miles was a better three-point shooter.
Coincidentally, my favorite press conference
so much,
ever.
I just brought up a press conference from like 4 years ago.
Well, my favorite press conference ever is someone asking Carmelo Anthony if he's going to be a sixth man. He goes, "Who, me?" That's my favorite press conference ever.
That was a good one.
Paul, you heard that? They said sixth man. They said bench.
Just like, really? Look. Maybe the Blazers aren't going to make the playoffs. Maybe they will. We'll find out within the next week, right? By the time we record this next week, we'll have the full playoff picture and we'll know. And if Dame ended up screwing the Blazers over by missing those 2 free throws, then I guess Paul George has the last laugh in this. But no one really cares about Patrick Beverley's part of this. Because as Jay mentioned, like, Dame is above that, right? Patrick Beverley gets to punch up. Dame doesn't need to punch down. But he and Paul George punching, those are even planes. And if you're gonna go punching, You have to be willing to take those shots. That's my issue with Paul George.
And I think Lillard gets the benefit of the doubt here too, because like his legacy right now, like obviously his legacy isn't solidified yet. Like it's not over. But right now he's a guy who stayed in Portland through whatever. And I think that's cool. There's a coolness to that. Like Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, the grit and grind, Z-Bo, Tony Allen, those guys, like there's a coolness to that. You don't have to win a title to be remembered and beloved and awesome. And so I think Damian Lillard has that stamp where like there's a coolness to the lane that he's carving out, and it's his own lane.
100%. I mean, it's a hairy situation, unlike when you use Manscaped, right?
Facts.
Now, let me tell you a little personal story, guys.
Well played.
I've been manscaping for years. Now, not with Manscaped tools. This has just been part of my grooming situation, right?
So you a veteran.
Oh, man. Well, I thought I was. I thought I was. You know what this feels like? This feels like I've been playing in pro-ams my entire life. And then all of a sudden, I got called up to the NBA. An NBA team signed me, and I was like, oh, this is what the pros are like. That's what Manscaped is. Because, and I'll even admit, I've told this story on other podcasts before, but I'm going to admit it to you guys because this is a safe space, and I believe that we should be honest with each other. I've been using this Lawnmower 3.0 for Manscaped for months until I found out that it's waterproof. I've been manscaping over a wastebasket like an idiot. Waz, you knew? You knew yes. before I did?
No. You actually put me on. I was manscaping on the can.
Right.
Right. And like, you know, just an easy drop off, flush
sure.
sort of situation. But the shower is a game changer.
You go right to the shower because this Lawnmower 3.0 is waterproof. It's part of the Perfect Package 3.0 kit that comes with the Lawnmower 3.0, the cordless body trimmer, and all of the liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. You also, for limited time, our subscribers get two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, it's a $39 value, amazing little bag that you can put all your toiletries in, and the patented high-performance, reduced-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. Dave, I know you're about these Boxer Briefs.
Everybody knows, because I have mentioned it every single time Manscaped comes up. These Boxer Briefs, no lie, are incredible. They're incredible.
Now, I'm going to throw two words at you that maybe you hadn't thought about putting together before, but once you use it, it'll change your life. Ball deodorant. I'm just going to say this. Now I'm not.
You hear that and you just think, how come we haven't been doing this the whole time?
Yeah. You know what word comes to mind when I say those two words together? Luxury. Let me tell you this. I don't want to get into personal business, right? What happens in the bedroom stays in the bedroom. I'll just tell you, since that ball deodorant came around, things are looking up. Well, as you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, no, of course. And especially, again, here in the Valley, it gets so hot, dude.
It's oh, my God.
You know, basically 100 degrees every single day. Yeah. So it's impossible to walk to the grocery store without this being an issue. So,
right.
You know, the ball deodorant has definitely been a godsend in that sense.
Yeah, and just because it's pushing three digits here in the Valley doesn't mean I can't take care of the one digit that matters the most. You know what I'm saying? You can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. And for a limited time, subscribers are going to get not one but two free gifts, the Shed Travel Bag and those Manscaped Boxer Briefs anti-chafing. Just go to manscaped.com today and use the promo code THEATHLETIC20. Now, speaking of things that don't cost a lot of money, you know what does cost a lot of money? Draymond Green. Draymond Green been tampering. He tampered on TV. Trey, he basically said, we got to get Devin Booker out of Phoenix. And now the Suns are hot right now, right? Suns are the perfect team in the bubble. They're 5-0. They're looking to go 6-0 against the Thunder in their next game. And Devin Booker has been the main reason for that. But Draymond Green says, that's not enough. We got to get him out of Phoenix. And he got fined $50,000 for it.
When keeping it real goes wrong, luckily Draymond has $50,000 sitting in his car panel. So
yeah, that's just couch cushion money for him.
Yeah, that's piggy bank money, so he can afford to that. But also kudos to Draymond Green and his breakdown. It was really good. Need more of that. But yeah, man, the Bubble Boys are doing great. The Bubble Boys are doing great. They got five. They're 5-0. They got a big game ahead of them tomorrow. And then also, so they're going to do a back-to-back, actually. They got the Oklahoma City Thunder, and then they have another team. I have to look at the schedule. But Booker's playing well. Campaign is actually playing well, which is rare for me to ever say in my life.
Shouts to Campaign.
Shouts to Campaign. And then, you know, the rest of the team, they're picking up Javon Carter, the Bulldog.
Yeah.
Had a good game last game. You know, they're locked in. You don't see too much of their content on NBA Bubble Life. They're doing what they're supposed to do. Monty Williams has these guys buying in, and it's only a glimpse, hopefully only a glimpse of what's to come moving forward.
It's such a weird time to be demanding that Devin Booker gets out of Phoenix.
Yes.
This was the wrong time. His whole career, you could have said, we need to get Devin Booker out of Phoenix. They have surrounded him with nothing. They have given him bad coaches, bad teammates, bad everything, bad owner. Now they finally have something worth believing in. Like those players, you can tell they are totally bought in. They are tough. They play hard. There is something. It's a real team now. Now, will Devin Booker take this team and win a title? No, but he can get to the playoffs with a team like this maybe in the future. And I just think it is a very, very strange time to say that he needs to get out of Phoenix when finally the Suns have a little bit of promise.
Now,
there's some promise.
They're in the midst
of their first 5-game win streak since 2014.
Okay, and all it took was a pandemic. Now let me play.
Right.
Let me play Donald Sterling.
Side note, the same time I arrived in Phoenix.
That's true. Actually, that's true. Now let me play Donald Sterling's advocate here. Okay, this is a team who started out the season like 7-4, which isn't 5-0, but 7-4, and it was, why aren't they higher in your power rankings? Oh, why aren't we putting respect on the Phoenix Suns? Oh, we need to look out. Oh, Monty Williams doing this, Monty Williams doing that. And I think Monty Williams is a solid coach, right? He's a good coach. He's a great motivator. He's a great communicator. But eventually, things get adjusted to. And what's helping right now is all these guys are bought in on defense. Like, I've never seen Devin Booker defend like this. Like, Mikal Bridges is getting all the praise, and he deserves a huge amount of praise. But the real reason that Mikal Bridges works the way he does is because, one, he's good, but two, they're switching him and Devin Booker constantly. So Devin Booker's actually doing almost, I would say, like 40% of the work that Mikal Bridges is getting credit for. Like, they're playing incredible defense, but at the same time, guys, it's the Suns. Like, it's the Suns. Like we're celebrating that the Suns haven't been the Suns in the bubble, which, yeah, let's do it. Let's celebrate as long as we can. But I don't know that it means Devin Booker needs to make a Kobe and Dirk career out of it.
Let me ask you guys a question. This was clearly, Draymond was kind of throwing a shot at ownership. You know, we the Suns routinely come up when we talk about ownership being a competitive advantage.
Yep.
Is there a point where the league needs to say, hey, you need to shape up or ship out? Because you can't have one of your teams so mismanaged that you have players going on television with one of your broadcast partners and saying that your best player and the franchise best player since, what, Steve Nash?
Yeah.
Needs to leave. Sure. That's bad. That's bad for the NBA. Every other team should be bothered. Maybe bothered by Draymond saying the quiet thing out loud, but let's not act like that's not true, right?
Yeah,
we all know this.
That's what kind of, I don't want to say I was pissed, but I definitely rolled my eyes, because if you pay attention to what Draymond does whenever he gets on any media platform, he's basically, this is his audition tape whenever he's done playing. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's being very intentional. He's trying to go viral.
Kendrick Perkins.
But I just don't know that you should be saying the quiet part quite that loud.
It's bad for the league.
It's bad for the league for him to do that. Like, it's just a bad look.
Is it, though?
I think it is.
It's a bad look.
So this league's built on tampering, though.
Be saying that.
But it's not tampering. All right. So I didn't think he was tampering at all. I get that, like, they made that little joke and that's what the league is going to fine him for. But to be honest with you, it's conduct detrimental to the league. Because what you're saying is one of your owners is so bad that the best player that they've had in 10 years needs to go somewhere else so he has a chance to be with a successful franchise. Now, don't stop at Phoenix, Draymond. That's what I say. Tell me what other teams players shouldn't be going to. Because you know Wolves, the players are Knicks, talking to each other about this, right? Right. So, Cavs, so Bulls, I mean, why sag. Stop? Right. Why stop with just Phoenix? You know, we got to get Mitchell Robinson out of New York because he might be good at some point. And so this is where I come at it from
Did
the league's perspective.
Mitchell Robinson on Devin Booker?
Well, I'm making a joke.
I was about to say.
Sorry. I mean, I'm saying he might be good one day. So let's get him out of there before he's good. And so, agrees, you know. Yeah. I think from the league's perspective, if this is a real thing, and we all know it is, right? At what point is it the league's job to say, all right, well, we got to get a better owner in here for the entire product?
But you can't they're never going to do that.
You've
they're
got 30 teams. That. You can't have one that's – and it's not, and it's more than one.
Yeah.
But you can't have an awful owner that's dragging down – by the way, Phoenix, not a tiny market, not a huge TV market, but not a tiny market. It's not like that team shouldn't be successful. The weather there is amazing, especially during the basketball months. They should be able to attract free agents. We all know what the issue is.
Right. It's sorry. Yeah, but I mean, here's the thing, Dave, is like, look what it took to get rid of Sterling, right?
Absolutely. No. And I like, as far as I know, there's nothing like that with that franchise. Right. But at a certain point, I mean, this is an entertainment product. If that's actively hurting your ability to entertain, you know, if one of your teams is so bad, they need to get rid of their best player needs to leave so that he can have a chance to be successful. Well, what does that say about your league? There is no parity. We already know that. But now we're saying that the owner of that team prevents them from being successful.
Yeah, I mean,
but see, that's a non-starter though to me. Because
oh, yeah, it's not going to happen.
As an owner, it's like, wait, we're going to kick people out for being bad. That's like half the league is gone. You know what I'm saying? Like that no owners are going to sign up for that, like, sort of precedent, like, you know, incompetence.
Just like they didn't want to sign up for Sterling.
I do think if you right. I think there should be a rule though. Look, I think it's impossible to enforce.
Like, if you miss 20
if you
20
miss a decade
a row,
decades worth of playoffs in a row, you should be out. I don't care how close you came. It, like, you could miss it by a game every year. I don't care. Like, you got to get out. Like the Suns franchise used to be great.
A model
right?
franchise.
Right? Like the 90s and the 2000s. Like it was like that. Like the Suns, look, they weren't the Bulls and the Spurs, but they weren't far from it. Like that was one of the best franchises that couldn't win a title. Like that's a franchise that deserves better than what Robert Sarver's doing. Now, does that mean they should lose Devin Booker? No, probably not. But I do think that I don't think the idea of getting Devin Booker away from there, and maybe I'm just sensitive to it because I watched the Timberwolves waste 12 elite years out of Kevin Garnett, right? And so now I'm always just like, hey, it's been 7 years. Get that guy out of here. You can't waste his prime. And so maybe I'm just too sensitive to it, but like I do look at that and I'm like, look, I don't think the Suns are hopeless, and I do like what they're doing in the bubble, but it is also like I look at the last 10 years like, man, like even the year they tried to tank, they won 48 games. And missed the playoffs, right? That was the year they were supposed to tank for Wiggins or Embiid or Jabari Parker, and they ended up like almost making the playoffs. Like they can't anything mm-hmm. they try to do, they normally screw up.
They've screwed up the roster around Devin Booker so bad that a lot of people still don't realize how good Devin Booker is.
Yeah, he's
like
he's
that's how bad the roster has been around him. Is that people doubt his abilities because all his teammates have been so bad. But they are competent now. But honestly, we would look at Devin Booker so much differently if he'd been on a even decent roster.
But Jay let me push back on this a little bit. What do you mean they're competent now?
The Suns roster and team, basketball team alone, they are a competent, competitive team.
This week?
They're not good.
This
they're
week,
competitive.
But they, like that's been a bad team since like week three this season. And they had injuries and suspensions and everything. Like, I get it, but like,
they haven't been a failure, though. Like,
that's fair. They haven't been a failure. Like, they've been the Knicks. So that's fair.
Right.
Yeah.
They got invited to the bubble.
Eh, well, I mean, so do the Wizards.
Well, that's true. And they have talent. Like, that's undeniable. This is the first time in a long time this team has talent.
Yeah.
And it's talent that actually fits.
Right.
It's talent that actually fits. They're not trying to do three tiny point guards. They're not doing any weird stuff. Like, it's a conventional, well-fitting basketball team that has a bunch of young guys that probably just need to grow, and then maybe they're going to be good. What? But at least there's some hope.
Yeah.
And there's finally hope. And it's like Draymond says, well, you know, got to get rid of that hope.
I guess my point, though, is, and Trey, like, I'm interested in your perspective on this because you've been around the team. You live in Phoenix. Like, we didn't feel any of that hope 2 weeks ago, right? Like, we were like, why is this team here? Why are this person?
No,
why are the Wizards
I think a lot of people were kind of laughing and stuff like that and wasn't supportive. But Monty, early on, they got a buzz early on in the season, obviously, asking if this team was for real. But
yeah,
to be fair, obviously, history doesn't really support them as much. But DeAndre Ayton's 25-game suspension, Ricky Rubio's lower back, losing Aaron Baines. The only player that's really been consistent is, you know, Devin Booker. They even lost Kelly Oubre. So it wasn't too much hope going into this. And I think Monty Williams has done an amazing job getting guys to buy in. It's just more so consistency and health. And that's been their issue. So guys being able to be, you know, spend that time for those 4 months working on themselves, getting themselves healthy and prepared for this moment. They're making the best of their moment, and I think that's why they're so focused. But the spinoff on it is that, you know, if they're not winning, they look like the laughing stock for trading off TJ Warren. So I think that the winning is putting a little, you know, putting a Band-Aid over a gunshot wound for the moment, because soon as if they drop one tomorrow, say to the Thunder, then it's the same old Suns, you know what I mean? But if they beat them, then it's the miracle team.
Right.
All of a sudden, they're going on this magical Disney movie run. So, go ahead, Wolf.
Yeah, no, and I know everybody is loving Devin Booker. I've been a fan of his. Basically, I went to the game, the Laker game, when Magic quit abruptly. they were playing the Suns that game, and I remember watching it like, wow, like Devin Booker is really good. But at the and just being a fan, and this was at the time where he was kind of, I don't want to say polarizing, but some people were just like, I'm not seeing it with this kid. But what I'm trying to say is, like, this is the first time he's ever put in that type of effort on defense. He was just god awful at it before this. And it seemed like he wasn't even trying. So it's, you know, it's not like he's been completely the model young franchise player since he's gotten there. But it's dope to see him grow and mature into what he's doing right now, because, you know, I just think he's a bona fide star.
Yeah, and part of that's allowing a guy to mature, right? Like, I think Devin Booker was very individualistic for a while, and I think under Monty Williams and just probably getting older and you know, missing the playoffs year after year, he finally realized, like, look, maybe this is what I have to do in order to take us to the next level. And I know I sound very negative about the Suns, and mostly it's because I don't think that franchise is well run from the ownership standpoint. And I think that poisons the well for everything down. Like, we've talked about that a lot over the years with just any franchise, but what they're doing here in the bubble, it might just be a hard culture reset that ends up carrying on long-term, right? Like, that might be the case. Like, I do want to leave some optimism there, but I also think, like, we go through this with a couple of teams every year where it's, oh man, it's late and they're playing well. Like, what's going to happen for them next year? And then they're still that team next year.
Well, you know, we talked a lot about the young teams coming into the bubble and the opportunity that it presents for growth, like you just mentioned. The Suns and the Spurs are the two teams that have actually taken advantage of that. The Pelicans played most of the time like they didn't want to be there. The Grizzlies have obviously had the Jaren Jackson injury and just struggled. But I think the Suns really did make the most out of their trip to the bubble,
absolutely,
whether they make the play-in game or not. And you know, I know that they've spent a lot of time this year focusing on that. Devin Booker was a different player this year from an approach standpoint, not just the stuff that he was doing on the court, but I thought his approach was different. You know, it didn't seem like the guy who was gunning for 70, let's say. And Ricky Rubio being out there with Booker, I think, has helped him quite a bit too, because it's opened up some secondary playmaking opportunities for Booker. And so we've gotten to see him in that role as well. I hope that they can carry over this stuff, but I'm with you, Zach, to a certain degree. We should definitely pump the brakes before we start saying they're going to make the playoffs.
Or even, like, let's say they do make the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, all right, just for whatever, they go 6-2, make the play-in tournament, win that, go in the first round, get swept by the Lakers. That's a step forward, but I don't know that I trust that franchise for, okay, now you're moving in the right direction. And there's an example of a couple of years ago with a very similarly bumbling franchise, the Wolves, right? They went a huge game 82 right. against Denver. They go and they had different issues. Like, they've got way different issues, right? But it's also a highly touted, highly talented top young guy on the roster, you know, getting a bunch of praise, getting a bunch of questions. They finally break through. They make the playoffs for the first time in, what was it, I think 14 years or something like that. And then they get smoked in the first round, and now there are issues within the organization. I don't think those are going to pop up with Phoenix necessarily, but just making that playoff, you know, that playoff berth doesn't necessarily mean, okay, now it's fixed. And I think that's the thing that I'm trying to keep in mind with Phoenix is that, all right, let's say even they are the Cinderella story of the bubble. They're not going to, well, I guess I was going to say they're not going to be in the bubble next year. We don't know that. Maybe they will be in the bubble next year. Maybe that's what the whole season's going to be.
I think we're all going to be in the bubble.
It does feel like the Suns have found the right formula, though. Like,
I agree with that. Yeah, because even with the Wolves, it didn't feel like the right. It felt like fool's gold, even though they were winning.
Yeah, the Suns, like, they surrounded Booker with tough dudes. Like, Bridges competes his butt off. Rubio competes his butt off. All those guys just really compete. And then I think bringing in solid veterans was big for him, too. Having Aaron Baines, having Ricky Rubio, like, he hasn't always had that guidance and have those guys to, like, set the tone for you. Sometimes you need to hear it from your teammate that your defense is unacceptable as much as from your coach. And I'm sure Baines probably let him have it. You know, Ricky Rubio sets a great example every day. I think those guys are big. And then some of their young guys are pretty good. I think Bridges has a chance to be a really good defender for a long time.
Yeah.
Obviously, Booker is, like, an all-NBA talent. They actually have pieces that they can build on. And it seems like the players, they believe in themselves for the first time in at least Booker's career.
Yeah, I just don't want to see Suns fans, Booker, Monty Williams, all these guys get caught with their pants down, which won't happen if you have Indochino. All right, Trey, you wanted to talk about something that I think has been kind of a very inside basketball conversation, but also something that that has been kind of all over at least the basketball Twitter conversation over the last few days. And that's most improved player, because the finalists for all these awards came out. The most improved player finalists, I believe, were Brandon Ingram, Bam Adebayo, and Jason Tatum. I have that right? And some people are wondering if that's the right combination.
Yeah. I think that at this point we have to change the requirements, because, like, Luka, right? This cat is like in the MVP candidates. Kind of, you know what I mean? And you got guys that have been all-stars, and I think most improved really should go to guys that's really low tier.
I'm sorry, Jason Tatum was not in the finalists. It was Luka, my bad. Yeah.
So you get to the point, you know, like a guy like Devontae Graham not even making it or being in the conversation. And then you got these guys that made the all-star team. Like, they wouldn't be playing in nothing else. They wouldn't play in the sophomore game or anything like that, you know? So
right.
why are we putting them in the mix? Yes, they did really well and up their game, you know, a little bit and got better enough to, like, lead their teams and be the guys for them teams. But I think it should go to guys that are really, like, at the end of the bench and just have, like, a great story. Like, Siakam, you know, was pretty good. But, I mean, I just don't, you know, like, if you're a top five guy, it's kind of hard to kind of say, like, they had an underdog story. I think the MIP should be underdog award, you know, versus guys that – potentially he's going to be who he was drafted at his position. Like, if you're a top five guy, I expect you to at least one day be an all-star, you know, sooner or later, year two, year three. And that's what some of these guys are doing, answering that call. But the guys that are drafted 55th, 41st, and, you know, averaging 20 points a game, those are the guys that need to be rewarded, I think.
But why wouldn't we expect a guy to be better from year one to year two? This is one of my big arguments about most improved. Like, shouldn't we say, okay, you have to be like a fifth year player to get most improved? And I think that's when Trey's point really makes sense to me. Like, Jimmy Butler, drafted second round, probably should have been most improved by the time he was fifth year in the league. Because then you actually have an idea of where he was projected to be to where he is. Whereas Devontae Graham, you know, we talked about this last year. Like, he didn't look like an NBA player.
He was not an NBA player last
year. Now he's like a backup point guard, right? Like, right. He's a good backup. I still think it would be harder to do what Luka did, which is go from rookie of the year to MVP candidate on an almost, you know, his best player on a team that was going to win 50 games. I think that's a more difficult leap to make. But in my opinion, I would never want to pick a guy who was second or third year in the league, just because I hope you're getting better. If you're not getting better, how are you staying in the league?
You know, as a
everyone expected that out of Luka, right? Like, maybe not
to
not
be
at the
an
level
MVP
he was.
Candidate.
I did.
Right. Nobody.
Maybe not the level.
I thought he was going to be like up there. He showed so many flashes of it, and then like,
but not this early.
I'm not on that train. I was already rolling. I never had any doubt with him.
Even if you didn't expect it this early, we figured at some point Luka Doncic would be a superstar.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
After
his
rookie season, well, that was pretty clear.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the question is, like, does this award need to be a surprise?
Yes.
Right? Like, and maybe it does. I wouldn't mind more clarification. So, Waz, as an award voter and as an official NBA ballot award voter.
Sorry.
I didn't want to throw that in there.
He said
there.
That with his pinky up.
I didn't want to throw that in there, but I.
There's a feather in his fedora.
Waz, it's not a big deal. I voted 2 years in a row. It's not a big deal. Okay, I don't want you to focus on that. Let's just focus on the conversation.
Okay. Gotcha.
I personally like. So it's just like, who do you think's most improved? Right? That's essentially what the prompt is for voting for that. And then it's a drop down menu. I personally don't consider second-year players for that award. Like, last year was the first year I voted, and De'Aaron Fox, one of the most improved players in the year, but he was also a second-year player, and I thought, I don't think that that works for him, right? And it's not that I'm saying he's not improved. He was absolutely improved, just like Devontae Graham is absolutely improved. But to me, like, I kind of to what Dave was saying, you're supposed to be better than your rookie year. Like, you just are. And I don't think after that, I don't think it's necessarily like, yes, you have to have this amount of improvement every single year. Now, if we wanted to say like, yo, you cannot be a top five pick and be eligible for this award at any point in your career, I'm fine with that. I would actually prefer to like kind of pare this down to make it less ambiguous to what Trey's saying. But yeah, like for me, like I didn't put any set, like I didn't vote Luka Doncic. I didn't even think of putting Luka Doncic on my ballot because he's a second year guy.
It should be someone like Christian Wood.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
Someone who has played in the league and you know what he actually was, and then he really, really improved, became a legitimate big man in the NBA after being on the fringe of a rotation, out of the league, whatever he was the first few years.
Yeah.
Now he's legitimate. And it should be someone like him.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't be a lottery pick or something like that, right? Like, I don't know what it should be, but maybe there's got to be some kind of.
I mean, the NBA awards are. I mean, we're still voting on the same awards we were doing, you know, 50 years ago.
Dave, they gave me a ballot. It can't be that serious,
right?
But I'm just saying, like I said, I feel that this should be an underdog award.
Yeah, I don't hate that idea.
It goes to the guy.
I don't either.
It goes to the guy that doesn't get that much love and pops out of nowhere. It should be the surprise award.
I'd almost be down with, you know, no first round draft picks. You got to be a second rounder or undrafted to be most improved. I mean, I would rather limit the field. You had to walk three miles to school both ways in a blizzard.
Right,
100%. If you want to limit the field, that'd be great. But the way we do it now is just silly.
While you talk, I'm going to look up how many most improved players awards are ineligible in history.
Probably not that many, because a lot of these just feel like guy who was, you know, expected to be good became good. And I think I'm with you on that, Trey. I do think a little bit of a underdog story makes it a better award. And I just wish that they would bake that into the process. I also would add an offensive player of the year. You know, you've got a defensive player of the year. There's a whole other side of the ball. And I know we kind of
let's get James Harden some hardware.
The MVP that way. Well, I mean, he probably would win it this year. I don't know, though. Giannis might win it. But I think we could open this up a little bit and add more nuance to the conversation if we did. But, you know, also awards are silly, so who cares? I'm of two minds there.
Just by the way, in the last 13 years, there have only been two most improved player awards by Dave's new criteria. That is Monte Ellis and Goran Dragic, the only two second rounders.
There you go.
But I don't hate that idea.
I stand by it.
Yeah, I don't hate the idea.
Stand by it.
Yeah,
if the award wasn't so ambiguous.
Right, and that's kind of the issue. Maybe that's the point of these awards, is to make them ambiguous and then we argue about them and everything. But like Trey, I mean, Devontae Graham is clearly one of, if not the most improved players in the NBA this year, because as we've noted many times, especially Waz and I, that dude did not belong in the NBA last year. And now he was like a guy who, like, granted, it's the Hornets, but that dude should have been starting on the Hornets all season. He was.
I remember when he got called up, and everybody was like, "What? Who was that?" Right? And then it got to a point where they signed Rose. I mean, not Rose, Rozier. And everybody's like, "Cool, whatever that means."
Trey's still thinking about that versus.
Exactly. that wasn't pretty, but look. Neither was a Terry Rozier signing. But overall, you know, you get Rozier and everybody's like, he's going to be all right. He's going to be a dog. He's in the right spot. And then we got Devontae Graham just showing up every night, putting his hard hat on and hooping. And, you know, with zero expectations. So you got to reward guys like that. And for him not to be on the, you know, the ballot is a slap on the face, man, because, you know, he was – some nights they didn't even have a chance, and he's – you know, willing them hitting game winners and all kind of stuff.
He legitimately made them interesting this year.
I want to tone down the Devontae Graham.
I was going to say, he had a really good October, November.
He had like two good months and then was awful the rest of the way. He shot 33% in December. 36.6%
you hit me with the because he's dragging Terry Rozier's bum ass around.
37.1% in February.
You know what's scary, Terry? Is having to give him the ball 30% of the time.
Hey, I like how Jay hit us with the "you need to relax." He hit us with the Will Ferrell pretty much, but okay. But again,
he turned himself into what I think is a fine backup point guard. But yeah, I mean, it is a little bit overblown. He had a nice little season though.
And he was certainly improved quite a bit.
Yeah, because he wasn't an NBA player last year. Like, he really wasn't.
Way better.
I'm not trying to be mean about it, but that dude sucked.
Well, in the bubble, we got to give it to campaign.
Oh man, I mean, campaign survived his career.
Where did that come from?
I mean, it came from probably someone saying, "You're 8 games away from spending the rest of your career in China." That's probably what that came from.
60-game though.
Like,
it came out of absolutely nowhere. No. I can remember when the Celtics played, he was on the Bulls, I think, and whoever was coaching the Bulls at the time just came out. Campaign did such a great job pretending to be Isaiah Thomas in practice today, like just trying to hype him up however he could. We were sitting there like, is he talking about scout team at practice? Like, is this guy really hyping up campaign for being a scout team player in practice? But he was. It must have been Fred Hoiberg. So campaign's come a long way. Maybe he's just pretending to be Isaiah Thomas out there in real life these days.
Hey, man, we saw him at Summer League last year, and everybody just agreed, like, wow, this is so sad. He's never going to make it back to the league. He's doing Summer League. Like, everybody was just like, sort of really down about his prospects to, you know, sort of stick to a team and make a rotation ever again. And this has been really cool. It's a really cool story, man, to see like the sort of highs and lows of his career, for him to come back and do what he's doing right now is pretty dope.
Yeah, it's pretty
well, he had Ty Jerome's breathing down his neck, man. He felt the pressure.
I like Ty Jerome. He can play. Will tell campaign's story or Devontae Graham's story. Maybe it'll be Artifact. They've set you up with one of their professional interviewers, guys, to capture stories about important people or things in your life. Think of it like a podcast episode about whatever you want. You can capture family history with parents and grandparents, talk about friends and family as a birthday, wedding, anniversary gift, both about how they've made a difference in your life. Also share some hilarious stories. Me personally, I get asked a lot. I think they see me making a career out of journalism and they think, well, he did it. I could do this, right? And so I get a lot of like, hey, how did you get a career in NBA journalism? And I'll be honest with you guys, I'm sick of telling the story. I'm sick of talking about the story. And so I went to Artifact. They interviewed me. They asked me a couple of questions. They asked me for some contacts of other people who could speak on it. And I'm going to have a podcast pretty soon with my story of how I became an NBA journalist. Journalists used very loosely there as well. I went to heyartifact.com, told them a few basic things that I wanted the Artifact to be about. Then I answered the questions. They scheduled my interview. took a few minutes. And the interview was about, I want to say like 25, 30 minutes. It wasn't that long. It was easy. Just called in over the phone from my couch here. And if you've had an interview before, it's answering questions. It's pretty easy. I'll be sharing the episode as soon as it's ready. But you can go to heyartifact.com. Here's some awesome samples. There's a ton of ways to use Artifact to capture stories with your friends and family. Just go to heyartifact.com. Use the promo code NBA. You'll get $40 off your first one. That's heyartifact.com. Use promo code NBA for $40 off. All right, guys. Last thing here before we go. Coming up this week, it's TJ Warren, who, unless Mikal Bridges is on the floor, cannot be stopped. I want to throw Devin Booker in there as well, because Devin Booker did a great job on TJ Warren. Unless those two Suns wings are on the floor, he cannot be stopped right now. LeBron couldn't do it. Nobody can do it. No one can stop him. He's scoring like crazy, and he's going against Jimmy Butler this week. Waz, there's been a lot of shit talking. We started the episode with shit talking. We're going to end it with shit talking. There was a lot of shit talking after their little kerfuffle there in January, whenever it was, and we've been circling these two games that they're going to face each other. Jimmy's missed the last three games. He said he's going to be... He should be healthy. He should be ready to go for this game. What can we expect out of the greatest score the bubble has ever seen versus Jimmy Butler?
Hey, man. Jimmy is not exactly, you know, what he was in his Chicago days as far as like a one-on-one perimeter guy. Obviously, he's still really good. Just his mental capacity on defense and just his instincts are still, you know, as elite as anybody in the league. But he's not that guy anymore. And so, you know, I kind of anticipate TJ Warren taking it to him. TJ's improved basically every single season since he's been in the league offensively. I have it on personal authority that he is like one of the craziest workout guys like out there. Like he's constantly working and fine tuning his game. The knock on him early on in his career was that he didn't play defense. I've been told that he studied Kawhi Leonard tapes the past two summers.
To get the braids right?
nobody, you're not going to have straight backs that crispy. I don't think so. But you know, it's been dope to watch him evolve as a player. And I think part of that evolution, Zach, is, you know, you're not afraid to talk shit to an all-star,
yeah,
to a guy who's known for his defensive chops and, you know, a guy who's made his name on defense in this league. So I'm really interested to see that. It's been dope watching him just, you know, just dropping 50 and 40 on cats' head tops all bubble long. So it's going to be dope, man.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Trey, it's kind of funny because when the whole thing with Jimmy went down, everyone was talking shit about TJ Warren. Like, who do you think you are? Even though he's had a great year, they was just kind of like, what are you doing talking this shit to Jimmy Butler? And it kind of felt like once we got the layoff and everything, TJ Warren just decided like, oh, I'm going to show them that I'm allowed to talk shit. Like, I'm good. I've improved every year, as Waz said. I'm going to come through and I'm going to drop something on these guys.
I think it's unfair to TJ Warren. It's just a lot of people kind of tapped out on Suns games. This dude's been a bucket from the very, very day one. The thing is that, you know, just people didn't watch the Suns. He can score. But I think now with, you know, Vic still struggling with confidence and trying to figure things out and DeMontis out, they've handed the keys over to him and let him rock. And with those 4 months being away from the game, he's taking advantage of it. And, you know, the confidence is high. He has a groove and guys keep finding him, you know what I mean? And they're riding his coattails. So I like it. And I think that, you know, obviously Jimmy Butler has earned his keep in this league. He's still going to have to play defense on the other end. And TJ Warren comes from a strong family background. I'm talking about Nate McMillan and them. You know, Nate McMillan and his dad played together at NC State. And, you know, he's a tough cookie, dog. So it should be nice. But also TJ Warren is questionable. So we'll see if we get this matchup. But I'll have my popcorn ready.
I don't think there's any way he's going to miss this game. You know, he's a 20-point-a-game scorer, and he was given away by the Suns.
Cash considerations. He might as well got traded for a printer.
Now, to be fair, that was a $1.1 million printer, okay? That's
right.
A good printer right there. That's got to be like an HP or something.
Same store the government.
Right. That also got the Suns able to get Ricky Rubio, so we have to be mindful.
Right.
We have to be mindful.
But that being said, you see what happens when he has some space to operate. Sabonis isn't out there, so the offense has actually got some room around the elbows and the places that TJ likes to operate. I was having this conversation with Mo and Seth in our group text. If you put TJ Warren on the Sixers, they immediately get better. Like, if you replaced Tobias Harris with TJ Warren, he solves so many problems for them.
I don't hate that.
That's a player that you don't necessarily build around, but good teams always have a guy like that. And so I think that when we talk about TJ, we should be thinking about him as a piece that maybe the Pacers should be really focused on this summer, and in particular because they've got decisions to make on Oladipo and Turner Sabonis. I think TJ Warren is a guy they should be considering a core piece going forward.
Yeah. I mean, he's been good. He established that he can hit the three last year, and now he's like, Jay, he's not just hitting threes. Like, he's hitting threes initiating the pick and roll. Like, it's not just, okay, he can spot up now. Like, he's doing stuff off the dribble. Like, this dude can score pretty much any way. He's a great, like, elite finisher around the basket. Like, he can always
been a bucket. Yeah. Like, he was probably born a bucket. He just has a nose for the hoop. He always had that. Back at NC State, he had that. Now, what he's added with the pull-up three-pointer game is such a big development for him, because that unlocks so many things for a scorer. When you have that in your bag, defenses need to guard you differently. It frees up so much else for you. I was just looking back at the Butler versus TJ Warren stuff. It was so personal when they had their little fight. Like, that was...
Oh, absolutely.
That was really... They were mean.
Yeah.
Butler called him fucking trash, said he's not at my level.
He kissed him goodbye. Like, he blew a kiss
Butler
to him.
Butler said... Butler treated him like a nobody, like an absolute bum. TJ Warren's gotta be just fired up. Now he's the king of the bubble god. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to this matchup quite a bit.
Waz, before we go, you know, I'm not saying Butler hasn't had an injury the last three games, but it's a built-in excuse if things don't go well, you know?
you always gotta, you know, drop those little breadcrumbs. You always need to do that just in case things don't go your way, and you can just, you know what I mean? You can brush it off and be like, well, you know, I was coming off an injury, well, you know, minutes restriction, yeah, well, yeah. You know, there's always a way to come up with an excuse. You know, or at least I've always found that to be the case.
That's why the Lakers always keep a whiteboard in the locker room.
Exactly. That's why. And let me just, a little tip for you, Jimmy. I know you're listening. Make a layup early in the game. And even if nothing has gone wrong, maybe just do a little limp back up the floor. Like, ooh, you know, I don't know if this is feeling right. You know, you don't do it on a miss. You do it on a make. That's how you get in everyone's head. Okay. That's just a little pro tip for you guys out there. You
running gingerly.
You run gingerly after a make, and that shows like, yeah, man, it didn't affect the shot there, but maybe it will later. Maybe it'll affect my defense later. That's just the game within the game within the game. Jay, I know you know what I'm talking about. That's just what you do. It's a veteran move. Jimmy Butler's a veteran. He knows what he's doing. We're gonna see that this week as we wrap up the bubble. Of course, we have on the Athletic NBA show tampering coming up on Tuesday. We got Hoops Adjacent on Wednesday. We've got Point of Contention Thursday. Nerdish Wrote on Friday. Make sure you're checking out No Dunks. Make sure you're checking out the team specific podcast from all your favorite beat writers and all your favorite hosts. To check that out, make sure you subscribe to the Athletic. If you're not subscribed to the Athletic, then make sure you subscribe to the podcast on any podcast platform. Leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, all that good stuff. And for Trevon Edwards, Wazzy Lambre, Jay King, Dave DeFore, Mike Smeltz, I'm Zach Harper. Keep it locked in on The Athletic NBA Show.